Welcome to Conscious TV with Tom and Ramon. Before we introduce a very special guest we have, just want to go over some things. Just want to say thank you to all 50 countries that have joined us, especially the last two new ones, Italy and Brazil.
Yay!
Yay! 50 countries, wow. Before we only had two countries.
Yeah, for being a couple of guys that don't know what the hell they're doing, that's not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad. So I'm going to make this sweet and short. So I wanted to jump right into our guest. So, Tom, who do we have?
Well, we've got Hillary Ramos. She is a renowned expert on multidimensional healing, an internationally known clairvoyant. Hillary specializes in communicating how the healing process frees consciousness from the 3D physical reality and enables the energy body to transcend time and space. And if that doesn't get somebody really interested in listening to this lady, I don't know what will. Hi, Hillary. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, we're really excited. So just for the listeners out there, we went through like 20 minutes of you know, trying to get Hillary on back and forth. So, as you know, this is pre-recorded, so that part is good. Hillary, first question. I was listening to one of your interviews, and you were talking about, I think you were about five, with the story with your grandfather. Can we start off with that story?
Sure. That's it's something I've began to talk a little bit more about most recently in the last couple of years when I've been doing interviews like this, and it's something I didn't really talk about for a long time, but not for any, you know, reason. It was just a personal choice, and my grandfather was a practicing psychic. He worked for, oh, the better last years of his life working out in the world as a psychic and medium, and he became very well known for what he did. And, you know, he held a typical career job his whole life and raised a family and always had an interest in Edgar Cayce stuff and a bunch of different, you know, avenues out in those directions. So he began to practice. And when I came along, he decided to practice on me. And so he would teach me things, and he was really my first teacher, and he taught me through my younger years into my teenage years, and then, you know, he passed away when I was in my 20s. And so basically he began by showing me how to leave my body, you know, go into meditation and do past life regressions and go in and talk to spirit guides. And he really just kind of was my first exposure to that. Now, I didn't realize there was anything, you know, unusual about it. I thought it was really cool. You know, as a 5-year-old, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, that's really neat. You know, I could make my astral body fly, and it was very easy to do, as I think it is for most children, because you don't have so much stuff attached to, oh, is this real? You know, you don't have it stuck in your head. And so, you know, he spent a lot of years teaching me how to, you know, remote view places. He would put objects into boxes and ask me what it was. And, you know, it was a game. He would formulate it in kind of a game-like setting. So it was a lot of fun for me. And I grew up with a really, really wonderful sense of dreaming. I mean, I always remembered my dreams. I would wake up and, you know, I had a very active dream life because of the meditation work that I was doing. And it really set the foundation for me to explore that. Now, I didn't realize it was different. I didn't realize everybody else was learning how to do this stuff until I went to school and, you know, realized that very quickly that, you know, a lot of people perceived it to be very strange or weird or, you know, what do you mean you leave your body? You're crazy. And here I am, 7, you know, and I'm thinking, no, really, I do. And so, you know, I navigated around that in my school years. You know, there was a lot of pain associated with that, too, because it was such a special thing, and I didn't have a lot of people to share it with. My parents were semi-open to it. They really didn't know what to do with me. I was quite the enigma child. I was seeing things, and, you know, I have paranormal experiences at night and, you know, had a lot of communication to unseen places. And him being a psychic, you know, he wasn't exactly welcomed with open arms from switching gears to a formal job to being a psychic with the rest of my family. So it was very unusual. And here I was following right into the footsteps. So if you can imagine, that was pretty funny back then. And so people didn't know really what to do. And, you know, I feel very blessed and I feel very lucky that I had somebody in my life who guided me and mentored me through that kind of stuff. And I went to school and I studied traditional psychology because I wanted to understand the mind and, you know, how the mind worked. And of course I didn't go into that, but it was a good background because once I left that, then I really started to pursue more alternative healing modalities, and I found my way to shamanic work, and that really was a good fit. And after I got to be a certain age, my parents kind of told my grandfather to stop doing whatever he was doing to me because I was becoming really, you know, they couldn't lie to me. They couldn't tell me I couldn't do things. I would know what they were saying, thinking anyway. And so yeah, I became very psychic very early on. And again, I didn't realize that this wasn't something that everybody else experienced. I just assumed everybody would know how I felt and what I was thinking, and when I realized that there was this big gap in most other people's psychic and intuitive development, I realized, you know, probably early on that this was something that I needed to pursue and find out why this is so shut down for most people. Well, most people don't have a caretaker or, you know, a loved one showing them how to remote view or to meditate or to, you know, read tarot without reading a book. I mean, he had a traditional tarot deck that he used to do readings with that I have now. He passed on to me. And the first thing he told me when I started to play with him was, don't read any book. Don't read any book ever on any tarot. Don't even learn what the symbols mean. Just completely intuit them from your intuition. And, of course, years later, you know, I found out that the original tarot deck is very, very, very steeped with very rich symbolism. It was kind of like an occult underground, you know, when the church was really going through the Inquisition. A lot of the, you know, the healers, the women, would hide this kind of, these kind of teachings in the tarot deck, and then they would just pretend they're playing cards, so they wouldn't be, you know, carted off and burned at the stake. So this was a way that, this was a gift that he gave me in the sense that he taught me how to read that intuitively. So now when I do readings with a tarot deck, I mean, it's just like a book. I can just read whatever pops up. It's never been wrong.
Yeah, that's the way I read too. Once in a while, I'll actually refer to a definition because something tells me that the words in that definition are the right words when I falter. I've been reading for about 3 years now. And that's probably the one thing that came into my life that has been the most helpful was having the tarot, because it opened a lot of doors for me.
It's a really great modality. It's been given a lot of
bad publicity.
It's been given a bad name over the years, but I think, you know, if you get back to the symbolism of what they're really showing in the deck, and again, you know, I've tried to open a couple books to kind of read it against the advice of him in my later years, and the material just doesn't make any sense to me. I read the book and I'm like, huh? So I just shut it and close it and keep with what works, you know?
So, one of the things I wanted to focus on this show with you, and it's funny that I'm so happy that we started off with the story of your grandfather, because it really ties into my question. With all the craziness that's happening around the world and here in Japan, and listening to the news over in Europe and in America and here, and I just feel like everybody's lying to me. They're just lying to me on different ends of the spectrum. As far as intuition, how do we harness our intuition? How do we develop that? How do you know from your intuition that what you're listening is true or what you're listening to is complete BS?
Oh, that's such a good question. I'm so glad you asked that, because I've actually been interviewed quite a bit on this very topic, especially as we go into earth changes and man-made events and stuff, and people just really feeling like something is wrong. I've been contacted by hundreds of people who have shared with me their dreams and, you know, having very prophetic dreams and, you know, things like, oh, this is so awful. They wake up and they feel horrible because they've had this catastrophic dream. And there's so many people not wanting to go into fear, which is a really good thing. But I think also we have to learn to have a very good relationship with fear. We've gotten really off with our relationship with fear and also our intuition. And what do I mean by that? I mean basically that, you know, fear is an instinctual, ingrained response to survival. And, you know, if you see, you know, if a deer is standing in the middle of a field and it feels like it's being watched by a predator, it's going to feel that. And it's going to be overwhelmed with a kind of anxiety that is going to save its life. And that's a fear response to a endangered situation. We've kind of fallen into this weird fog of psychological fear because most of us are not in a situation where we have to run for our life from some predator trying to eat us. You know, we really have kind of dominated the planet in the sense that most of the life-death situations come in the form of disease or accident or tragedy along those lines. And fear has become this kind of psychological stress response. And it's an interesting thing because most people are in a state of stress and fear and anxiety all the time. They don't know any different. So we've kind of gone into this conditioned fear response. We really don't know the difference, and what we're experiencing now is the difference. We are picking up intuitively on this kind of response of these different changes, and we don't know how to translate it because we have lived so long out of that natural state. And that also includes your intuition, because if we were living in our natural state, we would have a normal relationship with our emotions, and we would also have a normal relationship with our intuition. If you can't remember your dreams, you have a lot of work to do with your intuition. It's always a state of mind that you trust. You know, it's like your inner voice, your higher self. Call it whatever you want. I don't even care what you call it. It's just it's a voice that comes from the very deepest core essence of you that knows the truth beyond anything else, and learning how to listen to that and reconnect to that is an unconditioning process. We have been very, very conditioned to believe what we're told, that, you know, control and all of this other stuff is outside of us, God is outside of us, you know, nature is nothing to really care about. We've really lost this vital connection to the planet. But yet we are still of the planet. So we are still a biological creature with emotions and higher intellect. And, you know, we have our feet on the ground and our head in this kind of, oh gosh, manufactured paradigm reality that is so far from reality. That's, you know, many of you have seen the movie The Matrix. It's exactly what it is. We plug into something that is not real. And when we unplug from that, we begin to see a breakdown, almost like a weaving. If you take a thread and you start pulling it out, you start to see everything just kind of unravel. And a lot of people are going through that kind of an awakening process very quickly right now because that's really where we're at as a species in our evolution stages. We are evolving as consciousness, and we are learning what that even means. And as we tap into that, and we tap into our intuition, and we put fear into its rightful place, we put our relationship with death back into the rightful place as something to be of honor. I mean, death is an honorable thing. We don't have a normal relationship in the United States with death. We have this very bizarre, dysfunctional relationship that, you know, we just spend our lives going on and on and on about how afraid we are. Oh my God, you know, we might die. Well, yeah, I mean, we might. But if we just stay so frozen in that fear, that psychological fear, we will never live authentically. We will never love authentically. We will miss out on an opportunity to grow and to evolve our spiritual life, our spiritual selves here. And we will also kind of miss the boat when it comes to translating the energies that are coursing through us right now. And it's a really beautiful process if you can sit back and just look at it from that viewpoint. If you look at it from the point like, oh my God, it's a catastrophe, it's the apocalypse, the world is going to fall apart, and you just wake up every day and you're frozen in fear, oh my goodness, you know, what good is that going to do you?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, being over here. I keep hearing from my friends and family over in the States, like, oh, you need to get out of there and this and that. And I've gotten to the point, when I lived in New York, my intuition really, really played a part in, I would say, in survival. There would be times I would go into a bar and I would just feel really uneasy in a bar in New York City, and I'll have to leave. And when I would leave, I would hear the next day of some crazy fight that broke out or something. Or if I was invited to a party and, you know, me and my wife were going to a party and my stomach just started hurting, and I said, no, it's not good to go to the party. And she really wanted to go, but we didn't go. And then end up, people were arrested and stabbed, and all kinds of crazy things happened. So
That's like being the deer in the field.
Right.
Yeah.
You do know it. You feel it. Yeah.
Is there any technique that you do personally that you know, someone right now listening to the show can be saying, how do I know it's intuition? How do I know it's not my mind? You know, is there anything you do personally that can help someone develop their intuition?
Yeah, I think the hardest hurdle to get over when you're starting to go through that phase of waking up your intuition, because you've always had it, you're born with it. It's part of you biologically. Even your psychic senses is a biological ingrained sense that we have, and they're very much related. Well, you know, unfortunately, we've just developed such a linear lifestyle and pattern of understanding that it's really difficult to break out of that. You know, anybody who's ever been in a relationship and they've had an inkling that something's not right with their partner, you know, maybe they're having another relationship on the side or something like that, anyone can relate to the feelings of doubting that voice, doubting that questionable voice. Well, maybe I'm just being paranoid, or maybe I'm just, you know, and then if that person adds on to the charade, no, I'm not doing anything wrong, no, then you really think you're going crazy.
Oh, geez, you just spelled my first marriage.
Well, I mean, most people can relate to that kind of understanding. We've all been in, you know, situations like that where we are blatantly being lied to, and every single sense in our body knows that, you know, geez, it just doesn't feel right. And you keep going back to it, and you keep going back to it, and you rationalize all of these reasons why you should just let that go. Why? Because it's so much more comfortable. Well, we've been dished that on very large scales, and maybe we'll get into that later on in the show. But we just have to start listening, practice listening and trusting. Practice trusting. Even if you don't have proof, we become like this kind of scientific prove it world. You know, if you can't prove it to me, then you don't know what you're talking about. And so many times a lot of people are very afraid to speak up what they feel or what they intuit because they don't have any hard evidence to back it up. And, I, you know, at this point in my life, I don't need to back anything up that I say because I just have such a strong relationship with my intuition. I know what I see in my inner world. And, you know, how I leave my body and go look at things that I want to look at. I mean, the U.S. government poured tens of millions of dollars into a remote viewing program that they still are very hesitant to talk about. You can read a lot about it, you know, here and there. But, you know, the fact that psychic and intuition is a very real tool that we have, that we really can gather very accurate information with, I mean, tens of millions of dollars is not a small amount of money to invest into a program that, you know, teaches you how to close your eyes and go look at things and gather data. Yeah. So if a military-industrial complex is willing to do that, well, I would say, geez, why aren't we teaching everybody to do that? Well, because it works. So there's kind of this notion of the psychic being the 1-800 psychic with the big neon sign in the window, scarf wrapped around their head, and the gold ring on their nose, and saying, oh yes, you're going to get find a job, and
yeah.
Your Bluetooth is in your couch, and everything is fine. And so there's the stigma that goes with this that has kind of unfortunately deterred people from really wanting to pursue the psychic word. And also, I'm kind of getting off the topic of your question, but I think it's all related, because basically what we have to do is come back to ourselves, and we have to uncondition a tremendous amount of societal conditioning to really get back into that place. Unfortunately, it's really unfortunate. Not all cultures have to go through that. I'm speaking just of the U.S. culture, unfortunately. So maybe the big wake-up call for a country that seems to really love to go out and dominate other countries is in order anyway, where people really need to say, hey, something, it's not just about having the latest model Porsche or the biggest house or sending my kids to Ivy League schools and want, and consume. Maybe we've just practiced the art of looking outside of ourselves, and now we're seeing the consequences of that come full circle. So practicing listening to that voice, no matter how far out it sounds or how much outside pressure there may be to disregard that voice, anybody in academia world knows that if you try to go up with a new idea, it's very difficult to birth new sciences, new math, new everything in today's world, because everybody needs to know where it comes from. A lot of that's divined. Higher math is actually can be a spiritual state of mind.
Yeah. I'll give you an example of that. Recently, in the last, I would say, year or so, I've been seeing a lot of geometry. Like, if I go into a blank stare and just look at my wall, I'll see like a square pop up, and then there'll be another square inside, or a rectangle, or vice versa, or a circle. So, yeah. It was also rumored that, what was his name? The father of geometry.
Pythagoras? Is that who it was?
Pythagoras? Yeah.
Pythagoras. Yeah, the... Supposedly, that's how he came up with geometry. He had like a stepbrother that was like blue color skin or something. Have you guys heard that story before?
Well, I've heard that classical music can be channeled, or they can hear the symphonies in their dreaming, lucid dreaming. They can hear, they can see the sounds, and then they come back and they write these. Most of the most famous pieces have had some kind of, real creative, inspirational download, if you will. And I think that's where we really get our brilliant ideas from. We're looking at really coming into a new world with a new physics. We really are going to discover that. And they have now already actually discovered a new physics that is not in mainstream physics. And how do you get these kind of laws of nature? How do you get these formulas? The people whose minds are set on working on these things really do bridge into a place that can be considered spiritual when they really sit down and they start to put all of these things together. And it's a beautiful process that a lot of us have lost touch with.
Yeah.
For instance, Terence McKenna, are you familiar with his time wave theory?
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah, based on the I Ching. He got all that in a vision. It was a mushroom vision, I believe. But, the it's amazing what comes out of the ether. There's no denying it.
I really hope that people who are listening to the show can and are getting into this can... When they with their own kids, they can start doing the kind of things that your own grandfather did. Can you imagine what kind of society we would have if everybody was like your grandfather and did those, and we were all raised that way? But I mean, we do have the choice to do that now.
we do have the choice to do that now, you know, but, you know, unfortunately, I would love to see those kind of trainings, meditation even in schools, which some schools are doing, actually. They are moving into understanding, you know, the benefits of meditation and what it does to your health. The thing is it also starts to reconnect your intuition and your psychic senses. So the more you meditate, that's why all the great teachers and masters all around the world have always said, go meditate, go within. Go within because that's where you go into the ether. You know, you go into the ether with your consciousness. You go in with your consciousness, which is a real part of you. Your energy body can be as real as your biological body. You can actually, you know, manifest it in other places. I mean, these are very real techniques that you can learn how to do. But nobody really wants you to know how to do that, because once you start going into the world of psychic connection and, you know, intuitive development, and you start to really detach from the conditioned, controlled paradigm that we live in all over the world, well, that makes you a very dangerous person.
They lose their control over you.
So if you have billions of people going into themselves and gaining autonomy and independence from a structured paradigm, well, then you really don't have a structured paradigm anymore.
Here's another question about intuition. What is your feeling, your own personal gut feeling, with what's going on in the world right now, including Libya and Japan and everything else?
Well, that's a small question, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, we got an hour and a half.
That'll only take about 30 seconds, right? Well, you know, my take on it is this, and I'm going to be very blunt, and hopefully your listeners are already here anyway. What we're looking at in the world is, you know, there is an agenda. There are many agendas on this planet, but there is an agenda, and there is, you know, this just gigantic military-industrial complex that is like, you know, if you look at it in the ethers, it's like this gigantic monster-looking thing that just consumes everything, and it has an appetite, you know, just beyond anything we can imagine. And it has to be fed constantly in order to stay alive. And in order to feed this constantly, you have to develop a system of control that is right down to, you know, the very practical elements of our life. What does that look like to somebody who, you know, it just goes to work every day and pays their bills and raises their family and just likes to enjoy a good barbecue in their backyard? Well, I mean, what it looks like is the reality that money and paying your bills and going to work full time is not necessarily what your purpose is. You know, it's okay if you do it because you need to do it because you have things you want to do, but there are people who get so plugged in to the fact that this is all there is, that's why they suffer from things like depression, or other different stress-related, diseases, because they're not functioning or operating on the kind of frequency they're meant to. So we're looking at a world stage that's very interesting, especially recently. We're looking at, there's kind of a vision of the United States of the world coming into play. There's a lot of people out there talking about New World Order, you know, control this, that, everything, you know, certain families, bloodlines, secret societies, all of this different stuff comes into play. But what we're really talking about is attached very much to an agenda that was planned and thought out very carefully very long ago, and they have staged very specific events along the way to make it happen. I have talked to people personally who have said that, you know, I talked to Dr. Carol Rosen talks about this. She'll be coming on to my show, which you guys, you know, people can listen to every Thursday night at 8:00 New York time. I'm doing an interview with her this month, and, you know, she was the assistant to Werner von Braun, and she said that he told her back in 1977 that there was going to be a Gulf War, that the Gulf War was something they were planning, that they would be planning this kind of us versus them with the Russians first, and they would use that as an excuse to develop space weapons. So they would put the space weapon program up into the, you know, to the atmosphere up there and, you know, do their thing because we were fighting the commies and the spies and we got everybody on board and you know, and then we were looking, because it started basically back in Germany too, but we were looking at the Russian threat. And then we were looking at the terrorist threat. Now, he told her this back in the late 70s, that we would be looking at the terrorist threat, that we would actually go out and provoke wars, provoke threats, to pour vast amount of money into the military-industrial complex, not only to make people rich, to make a lot of money off of it, and gain control and power, but to continually have an excuse to further develop much more advanced space weapons. So after the terrorists will come asteroids, and they play along into the 2012 prophecies and, you know, the world ending. And the people who make these agendas know very well what the prophecies are. They know the occult. They know the different timings. I mean, it's no accident that we went to war with Libya on March 19th.
Mm-hmm.
We started war with Iraq on March 19th, and it's also the goddess Athena's birthday, which is the goddess of war. So we're looking at them provoking and invoking energies that they understand. And when you tell people that they understand occult happenings, they look at you like you're crazy. I don't care if they believe me. They can look it up themselves. There's plenty of research out there. People have done it for years. And so we're dealing with a very interesting thing. They also know that, you know, we were looking at the beginning of a new underworld phase on March 9th with the Mayan calendar. Carl Cullinan and Barbara Hanclow are two incredibly brilliant experts on that. And everybody should read everything they can get their hands on from both of them. And, you know, here we are looking at a tsunami to hit Japan within the first 3 days of March 9th. You know, we're looking at a nuclear issue. Nuclear issue is karmic. We're looking at a karmic thing here. You know, we have to start taking responsibility for the energy that we produce on this planet. Earth changes have happened forever. Forever. The planet has changed over time cyclically more than we can even fathom, more than we can even understand, more than our scientists tell us. And, but they haven't had nuclear power plants on major earthquake fault lines. So we're looking, you know, imagine if the continent shift were to happen again, you know, we would probably see a lot of people die on this planet. We would see a complete change of geography. But what we wouldn't be dealing with is massive radiation release. You know, not to mention the other kind of weapons you don't even know about.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things. So we're talking about a very interesting play on the world stage. And then the ultimate threat down the road, which we're being very conditioned for now through Hollywood and other venues, is the ET threat. We're looking at the ET threat becoming something that finally disclosure will happen, and it is starting to happen. Brazil has openly disclosed it. Britain has openly disclosed it. France, yeah. And so we have these countries coming in, but it's like a slow leak into people's psyches. And I had a conversation with Phil Corso Jr. over this, and we blatantly disagree on this. And I said to him very clearly, I said, you know, it's like we're having a very controlled leak into our consciousness of information. Oh, no, that's not the case. And I said, absolutely is. When you see a little gray alien on a cereal box, and you're feeding your kids that certain, I mean, any child on this planet can tell you a show tune before they can tell you how many presidents they've had in their countries. You know, the brainwashing through TV and through product and through movies is just, and video games is an extraordinarily effective way to get the point across to us psychologically. And so we're seeing a tremendous relief. Big films come out of Hollywood this year that are themes like Battle of L.A. which I saw recently. Just I go to see these movies just to see the story being sold. And we have Cowboys versus Aliens. I mean, who hasn't played Cowboys versus Indians at some point in their life? Look what we did to the Indians.
Yeah. You know, the, with everything happening, I'm starting to get a deep feeling like, okay, so this radiation cloud has moved off of Japan into, now it's hit California, and they say it's landed in California. And what I don't understand is, now, I'm not a weather person, but from my understanding, clouds, the jet stream and the weather, when it moves from the Pacific, it usually goes north. From here would be northeast. So instead of going into Southern California, it would go maybe more towards you, Tom.
Well, it kind of undulates, kind of like a snake. The jet stream coming from the west. Yeah. Does so right now. I keep a kind of a close look, an eye on all the satellite stuff, and it is dipping down right now. So
yeah, but I don't know. I get the feeling like, what if that radiation is coming off of something else? Like, and I'm this is 100% speculation, but if they're doing some kind of experiment or something, and then it's easy for them to use the Japan cover now. To say, oh, it's coming from Japan.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, one thing I've noticed is that when I go on to, like, one of the major search site homepages, you really don't see too much about Japan. I've noticed they started to take the focus. Now, I'm not saying all of them, but there are a few particular ones that don't have many stories on that. It's now become kind of a more, you know, hidden headline down on the bottom part of the page, whereas before it would be one of the highlighted things. And of course, CNN and things like that, they're still doing it, but now they're showing a lot of the, you know, the ridiculousness over in Libya. So we're seeing kind of like this, what happened to the Gulf of Mexico. Remember that? You know, we had a big oil spill there.
Yeah.
Remember? We dumped, like, billions of gallons of chemicals in there, and now just, just vanished off the face of everybody's mind because of the media blackout. Still there. And so it just goes to show you the power of presence that, you know, people, the power of media and how much faith people put into that kind of information. The source of information, the officials. Well, who are the officials? I never see the officials. Do you ever see them lined up giving press conferences? Who are they? I don't know who they are. I mean, it really bothers the officials. Well, who the heck are they? Are they, you know, it's like somebody just writes that in there because they're on a writing deadline. Well, the officials say this is true. Well, that's great. Well, my officials say that the Gulf of Mexico is still oily. People are still suffering down there. We have a tremendous amount of health issues down there. And, you know, we don't hear anything about it at all, and that's very disturbing to me. We're looking at a world that is now controlled by people who have such power in, you know, making a phone call and saying, kill the story, and it's killed. And then it's killed in people's minds because the majority of people are still plugged in. And that is changing because we see iodine selling out all across America. People are just buying it, you know. And now that the officials have stepped up once again and said that there is no threat, blatantly, there is no threat in the United States. And then Obama and his entire family fly down to Brazil for a few days. Well, that's so convenient. I wish I could just take my family and fly down to Brazil and step out of the radiation cloud while it passes over. I mean, the point is that it absolutely is here, but so are the billions of chemicals that they've dumped into the Gulf. That's by far much, much more of a worry than something, I think, because that has definitely affected the Gulf Stream, and it has definitely affected, gotten into the water cycle, and, you know, we're all breathing it. We're all consuming that. But nobody's talking about that either. Why? Because there's so much money in the oil industry. There's so much money in these big military complexes, military industrial complexes. They're all tied in together. And, you know, all it takes is one phone call from some big corporate head person to whoever it needs to be called, and it's done. You know, we think we vote a president in, and that is really not true. Quite frankly, I want to know who counts the votes. I mean, when we go in, and now they have this electronic thing, which I think is just ridiculous, you know, this electronic thing where it scans your things and collects the data electronically and figures out who you're voting for. Well, I mean, it's just really not the reality of what happens. Presidents are conditioned, or they're groomed for it. I mean, they're basically chosen by the military.
They're selected, not elected.
Correct. But try telling that to most people. It's very difficult for them to wrap their heads around. However, when they start to really look at what's going on, and they start to do their own research, and they start to connect the dots themselves, intuitively, they start to see a very different picture. And that's when you have a true awakening into your own world.
Yeah. I mean, after the Bush thing, it was hard for me to vote after that. I know they're always saying, like, they're always advertising, vote. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice, whatever. But it really deterred me from voting after that.
Well, did anybody vote to go to Libya and blow them up?
Yeah.
I didn't. I didn't even know there was a vote. We're not in charge. We're given this kind of, you know, we're like little puppies patted on the head. Good job. You know, and we just think we're the greatest things on earth. It's just really funny. I'm sorry. It's really bad. That's a bad example. But I mean, we really are not. We're not in charge of what our country is doing. Our country gives us rewards through, you know, ridiculous ways of having materialistic opportunities to become wealthy and rich, but they, you know, we're seeing the result of this massive consumption that takes place. And quite frankly, you know, we're still in Afghanistan. We're still in Iraq. We're still there, guys. And you know something? Now we're going to be in Libya. And I'm just so curious how he makes a decision like that in Brazil. Well, it's because it's not really just his decision. You know, this is not just Obama. This is not just whoever standing in the presidential, you know, poster child room. It's really just the person who's running the show financially. Follow the money.
Yep.
Follow the money. You'll always find it.
They're going to start... the average person's really going to start seeing these, because at least here, I teach English here, Hillary, and a lot of my students, they're not into this at all. You know, they're learning English because they want to get a better career, and they're going the 9-to-5 job, and now they're really like, wow, I never knew the media was so full of crap. And that's what a lot of them are telling me. They're just, you know, flabbergasted by how the media is just right out lying to them. Because before then, they always believed that the media always told them the truth. So I feel that all over the world, a lot of people are starting to realize that, you know, something really is wrong with the world, and that you're being lied to consistently. Are you feeling that yourself, or...
Well, yeah, and I think what happens, too, is when people start to break into, you know, the, quote, conspiracy world, or, you know, other subcultures that hold just as much fascination and intrigue, but also, you know, there's a lot of disinformation. And you start to get into this really weird labyrinth of what's real and what's not real, and so-and-so says this, and... so-and-so over here says this so-and-so is full of it. And then you start having all this really confliction. And alternative media is being infiltrated. It's already been infiltrated. And so you have this odd mixture of people who are really trying to do the right thing and wake people up and get truth out there, who have done their homework, who have done their research, and done it very well. And, you know, they may have books to sell. They may not have books to sell. Who knows? But what they're doing is they're so pulled into a purpose that is aligned with the breakout of this kind of freedom that it brings. It brings a tremendous amount of freedom when you know your life isn't controlled by certain factors. And so that certainly has spurred me on this quest. I mean, I started out as a practitioner working and teaching Reiki, and I'm an ordained minister. So, I mean, I've really gone through a tremendous spiritual awakening. And then what happened was, once I got to that point, I began to question, well, why does Reiki work? You know, why are we seeing tremendous healing taking place from laying on the hands and working with energy? You know, why? And other people will, too, when they start to see and experience and validate those kinds of realities. And then it kind of opens you up to saying, well, my God, we're more than the body. Well, yeah, we have a spirit, but what's this at work? And we start to kind of get a very curious mind when it comes to figuring out what this is. So it begins a path for many people to start walking into what are we really? And then it opens up this tremendous amount of wealth of information into us as multidimensional beings and how we're affected by energy and symbolism and dates and traumas, collective traumas. 9/11 is a collective trauma that gets played off on all the time to stir the finger pot of fear and trauma in people so that they become immobilized. Or afraid if something else happened, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we have this wonderful unfolding of the human senses opening up into other arenas where then all of a sudden they can see, oh, my God, look at all the symbols around me that are used to talk to me subconsciously that I wasn't even aware of before. And there is a whole pattern of them out there. Advertisers spend millions of dollars to use them against the psyche of the consumer. And, you know, there's all kinds of messages in advertisements, whether they're still or on TV. So we're talking about a very real thing. You know, ancients might have called that magic. You know, a magician might have been able to convince you that you see this when you really don't see that. So we're looking at kind of a modern day alchemical, you know, magi running the world, basically, for the greed and good of themselves.
Yeah, definitely. Tom, so go ahead.
There's one of the big stumbling blocks that I see a lot of people getting stuck on is the big, the anger factor. You know, once they start seeing that, this place is really bad, corrupt, and they start digging into the conspiracies. And I meet people that are just completely stuck there. And I don't know if it's best to just leave them there or try to guide them out of it. I don't know. It's a conundrum that I'm dealing with here. Where I work, there's a few guys that are really stuck on the conspiracy end of things, and I see the light in them. I see I love the word namaste. I mean that the meaning in that word has so much for me, and I see the divinity in them, and I see the spark in them, and I just want to grab them and pull them out of that conspiracy stuff and say, hey, there's more to life than that.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. It's kind of like an eddy. You know, you're going down the river and you get stuck in this eddy over here and you can't get out of it. And you're stuck there until you figure out how to move out of there. And again, that goes back to what we started to talk about in the beginning of the show with your intuition and your psychic abilities. Being able to see through, you know, what's happening. And I started to address this, and I think I got off topic, but when people really start to get lost into these things, you know, they don't know what's real, what's not real, you know, who's telling the truth, who's not telling the truth. Well, isn't that convenient? Isn't it convenient that you have a movement of truthers out there who are trying to really move information out there to help and wake up people, and then all of a sudden the whole movement is kind of disrupted by this separate and divide thing? And then you have the people who do get very angry about what's going on, and they can't move past that anger because they don't know what to do with the emotion. So we have a healing aspect to moving through conspiracy that needs to happen on a level that's almost considered spiritual. Because as a multidimensional person, as a multidimensional being, you know, you have to be able to ground your energy. You have to know what that means. You have to know how to do it. And then you have to know how to pull in higher energies to keep you out of the frequencies that a lot of that information can get you stuck in. And if you get stuck in those frequencies, then you can have all kinds of things come at you from the ethers. Not everything in the ethers is a warm and fuzzy, you know, Easter bunny.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a fact. It's a fact. You can ask our indigenous elders if they're willing to talk to you. They'll tell you. They'll tell you what's out there. And they'll tell you that not everything is, you know, not everything is good and not everything is bad. It's a frequency. And if you're stuck on the frequency of hate and anger for a long time, or even grief and sadness for a long time, your energy will affect your body, and you'll feel that physically. Just like if you go meditate or you go on a beautiful, inspiring vacation for 2 weeks, you're uplifted and refreshed. Why? Because your energy has been uplifted and refreshed. You have to know how to heal yourself multidimensionally in order to really be effective in navigating through these kind of topics and understanding how to translate them for other people and also yourself and what to do. People will ask me, well, what should I do? What should I do? Well, acknowledge it, see it, just like you would see an aspect of yourself that's really bad and needs to be changed, and then go figure out how to do that. You know, I mean, if shopping and buying from these big corporate companies that are just destroying everything, if it just means simply not buying there anymore, well, that's kind of a conscious decision, don't you think?
Yeah.
Hillary, we're coming up at the top of the hour, so we want to give you a chance to give out your information for BBS. We'll definitely have Hillary on the archive, so make sure you go on to the archive page for the second part. Can you give out when your show is and your...
You've got a couple shows now, don't you, Hillary?
I'm sorry, I didn't
You've got a couple shows now, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I've been on Achieve Radio for about 4 years now, and I air every Thursday night, 8 o'clock New York time, and that's consistent. And I just launched a new show called Multidimensional Conversations with Myself on the World Pooja Network, and I air on the World Pooja Network every first and third Monday of every month at 7:30 Pacific time.
Okay. And
so people can always go to my website. Yeah, my website, Hillary Raimo, that's RAIMO.com. You can find out more about some of the energy trainings and sessions that I offer.
Okay, cool. So how much time we got left, Tom?
We've got a couple minutes left. I want to get out there. One thing that we're doing on the website right now, in the forums, we are running a little bit of a contest for everybody who registers on the forums. Crystal Clark has graciously agreed to donate one of her books, the Who Are We Really? 102, which is her second book, to the winner of the contest, which basically we're going to take everybody who's registered on the forums, throw their names in a hat, and pull a name out, and we'll give that person a book. So make sure you pop over to conscious-tv.com, and it's right on the top of the page, the main page, and click over to the forums and get registered. Plus,
yeah,
there's a lot of good conversations that are starting up in there, so participate.
And so make sure you go to www.conscious-tv.com, go over to archive and hit on Hillary Raimo part 2 so you can listen to the part 2. We're ending the BBS time here. So anybody, any parting words?
Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance.
Thank you and have a good night.